From KPFK Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The 43rd President of the United States gave a well-received speech in New York on October 19th, where he not so subtly criticized Donald Trump. Without naming him, George W. Bush, who seems to have become emboldened since Trump's win last November, spoke of pluralism and the values of democratic participation. But there was a time when Bush was derided everywhere he appeared. Indeed, after his tenure ended in 2008, he disappeared from public life, as if to hope that Americans would forget the mayhem and constitutional attacks that his administration unleashed. Yet today, mainstream liberal-leaning media outlets are lauding the president, who was, before Trump came along, the least popular of all U.S. presidents. How did we go from the slogan of anybody but Bush a mere 10 years ago to wishing W was back in charge? My guest is Juan Cole, the Richard P. Mitchell Collegiate Professor of History at the University of Michigan. He's written several books, including The New Arabs, How the Wired and Global Youth of the Middle East is Transforming It, and Engaging the Muslim World. He has a column at truthdig.com, and his blog Informed Comment can be found at juancole.com. Welcome to the program, Juan.
Thank you, Sonali.
Now, you were one of the foremost critics of Bush during the Bush years. And I remember on Pacifica Radio, you were on almost every week talking about a new indignity and atrocity that the Bush administration was pushing. How do you view the sort of rewriting of the Bush legacy, the whitewashing of the Bush legacy, particularly in the mainstream media coverage of his latest speech?
Well, corporate news doesn't like the establishment to be unpopular because it is the establishment. So they're always trying to rehabilitate anybody high in public life. And this is not strange or unusual. Of course, they have a tendency to make excuses for things that they supported. So virtually all of the major cable news networks were gung-ho about the invasion of Iraq, which was quite illegal. And indeed, MSNBC fired Phil Donahue in anticipation that he would be a big critic of the war.
So let's actually watch a short clip of the speech that Bush gave October 19th in New York. Here's George W. Bush, who seems to have re-entered public life since Trump was elected.
In recent decades, public confidence in our institutions has declined. Our governing class has often been paralyzed in the face of obvious and pressing needs. The American dream of upward mobility seems out of reach for some who feel left behind in a changing economy. Discontent deepened and sharpened partisan conflicts. Bigotry seems emboldened. Our politics seems more vulnerable to conspiracy theories and outright fabrication. We become the heirs of James Madison by understanding the genius and values of the U.S. Constitution. We become the heirs of Martin Luther King Jr. by recognizing one another not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. This means that people of every race, religion, ethnicity can be fully and equally American. It means that bigotry or white supremacy in any form is blasphemy against the American creed.
And that's George W. Bush speaking about, among a number of things, bigotry. In fact, he used the term bigotry several times. Juan Cole, let's remember the history of what happened right after the September 11th attacks, which of course took place very early in Bush's tenure, just about a year after he was elected. And that was the turning point for not just his tenure, but for the country. Very soon after that, here in the United States, setting aside what he did in the foreign arena, which we'll get to, he had the so-called special registry, or Muslim registry, which many could argue it was sort of the first version of the Muslim ban, right?
Sure. His government gave the impression to people who were green card holders or here on visas from certain countries that they had to come in and register. There wasn't actually, in many cases, any legal compulsion for them to do so, but they were given this impression that it was better they did. And then that registration was often used to deport them or in some cases, to prosecute them. Many of the prosecutions and deportations were frivolous. The charities like the Holy Land Foundation in Texas were accused of terrorism for sending money to the suffering people of Gaza. So the thing about Bush is that his rhetoric was fine on race relations. He tried to appeal to Latinos. He warned people not to go around attacking Muslims.
Right. His speeches were very different from Trump's speeches.
His speeches were very different. So there's a difference in style and tone. In a way, there's a latent racism to Bush's career. He got elected in 2000 in part because Karl Rove did robocalls to voters in South Carolina in the Republican primaries and accused John McCain of having an illegitimate African-American daughter out of wedlock. The reference was to his adopted Bangladeshi daughter, Bridget. So there's all kinds of racism all bundled up there in one. And that defeat of McCain in South Carolina laid the foundation for Bush's success. It was just pure racist campaigning. Mm. So he would never say anything like this in public, right? So the thing I think that the Bush Republican establishment minds so much about Trump is he's letting the cat out of the bag. A lot of Republican electoral success since Nixon has been playing on white fears of blacks. And there's a dog whistle racism implicit in it. And of course, now Islamophobia has come to the fore, but all done in a very proper ballroom style. And Trump has come rampaging in, openly saying these things, which were supposed to be latent.
Right. He's wearing his hatred on his sleeve, and that rubs the Bushes the wrong way. I mean, just to remind ourselves, this the special registration going back to what happened in September of 2002, so just about a year after September 11th. In that year following the attacks, you had the establishment of the Department of Homeland Security, which, just the name of it has these Orwellian undertones, even though we now sort of accept it. You had the USA Patriot Act being voted on, which both parties were quite happy to pass. And then you had the special registration, the NSEERS program is what it sort of became formalized at, the National Security Entry Exit Registration System. And the Arab American Institute describes it this way, a domestic component to the war on terror. It was a system for registration of certain non-citizens within the United States, required non-immigrant men and boys from predominantly Arab and Muslim majority countries to report to an immigration office to be photographed, fingerprinted, and interviewed. In the end, more than 13,000 men who complied with the registration were placed in removal proceedings. So this was something that Bush started. We have forgotten this. It specifically targeted men and boys from Muslim countries. And it's amazing. You don't hear this being brought up by the Washington Post and MSNBC.
Oh, no. Well, they were on board with it. And this is the other thing to remember is that what we think of as the liberal press, because we keep being told that it's the liberal press by Rush Limbaugh and the right-wing media machine, is a very establishment-oriented press. And it's not the reporters' fault. In most cases, the editors, give titles of their articles, assign the articles, and decide which ones will appear. And the editors are reporting to the corporatocracy. This facade that the corporate media are somehow liberal, I guess, in the sense that they're supposed to be on the side of workers, and yet they have no labor reporters anymore. They don't report major labor strikes. In what way is this media supposedly progressive?
And then let's talk about the foreign policy aspect of it. Trump has expanded dramatically what Obama continued, but it was George W. Bush that started specifically after September 11th, the worst wars, two major wars that continue today, the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War. That's not to say that the U.S. wasn't involved in those two countries before 9/11. Of course they were in a big way, but what he launched after 9/11 really laid the groundwork for the Islamic State, etc., right? I mean, we forget about Guantanamo, we forget about Abu Ghraib, that huge aspect of the most devastating U.S. foreign policy is something that George W. Bush doesn't quite talk about in his speeches. He's painted scenes from Abu Ghraib, and some say that he's haunted by the torture of detainees. But again, the mainstream media is also not bringing that up.
Well, that's right. Bush invaded Iraq on false pretenses. And he and members of his administration hinted as broadly as they could that somehow Saddam Hussein, the Ba'ath Party in Iraq, was behind the 9/11 attacks. This is one of the great falsehoods ever uttered in human history. It's simply not true. There's documentary evidence that it's not true. And most of the little stories that the administration then told, like Saddam Hussein ordering hospital care for one of the al-Qaeda representatives in northern Iraq, were complete lies, just fabrications, fantasies. And these were purveyed to us by the National Security Advisor, by the Secretary of State, by the Secretary of Defense, and by Bush himself. It was a purely propaganda regime. Condi Rice said things like, "We don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud," implying that Iraq was on the verge of having a nuclear weapon and using it. That was a complete lie. And they say, well, nobody knew that it was a lie because everybody's intelligence pointed that way. The French intelligence didn't point that way. This was propaganda. And so they propagandized the country into a war of aggression of a sort that the United Nations had attempted to outlaw after World War II, after the Axis powers had conducted many wars of aggression after Hitler had invaded Poland. The United States did exactly to Iraq what Hitler did to Poland. There was no casus belli here. There was no international basis for that war. And so Bush set the country off onto a path of illegality. And what did he expect would happen if you invade a country illegally and occupy it? Of course, there's going to be millions of people displaced. There are going to be hundreds of thousands of deaths. And yes, there's going to be torture because people don't want you in their country and they're going to mount a resistance and then you're going to capture them and torture them. So
Many would argue that the horrific photos that emerged from Abu Ghraib of U.S. soldiers dehumanizing and humiliating Iraqis laid the groundwork for the attacks on U.S. soldiers and for the Islamic State and for even terrorist attacks in Europe. Basically, what was foisted upon the Arab world was just this huge slap in the face, and Bush started this. I mean, this is something, even Guantanamo today, which now several presidents, you know, Obama wanted to shut it down, couldn't shut it down. Trump is happy to use Guantanamo. He probably wants to expand it and start refilling it up with people that have no constitutional rights. All of that should be laid at Bush's feet, right?
Sure. Well, for him to complain about bigotry and the loss of civil liberties is very rich because he connived at it. I mean, what was Guantanamo? It was an attempt to create a space of extrajudiciality, a space where the president could do as he liked to these persons.
Yeah, because they were not on U.S. soil, he could claim that there was no constitutional rights required.
Right. And since they were not formal military members, there was an attempt to put them outside the laws of war and the laws governing the treatment of POWs. So they were they this is going back to the age of the absolute monarchies in Europe, where a prisoner was considered the king's prisoner, and the punishment was inscribed on the prisoner's body by the king in revenge for the crime, which was a crime against the body of the king. So this is a neo-monarchism, Guantanamo, which Bush in his megalomania attempted to revive.
Now, I don't want to let Obama off the hook either. There were the choruses of anybody but Bush in 2007, Obama won in 2008, and a lot of people were taken in by the hope and change aspect of it. Some of us were more skeptical. And Obama had the opportunity, especially early in his tenure, to undo a lot of the damage that Bush did. But in many places, he didn't. He simply continued it on immigration and deportation. He worsened it. Some places was just sort of a holding pattern. And so I think it's important for us to also remember that Obama, who is also speaking about Trump and Trumpism, should be held somewhat responsible, right?
Well, I have mixed feelings on that. I think there are some ways in which what you're saying is absolutely true. I mean, it should be noted that Obama did get rid of NSEERS.
Yes, this was the special registration program
talking about. And moreover, that with the exception of a few months, he never had any hope of getting anything through Congress. And so many things like closing at Guantanamo, he was not allowed to.
Right. He did want to close Guantanamo. We got to hand that to him.
The Republican Congress forbade the government to spend money closing it. And since they control the purse strings, Obama was stymied. So on those issues, he was certainly much better than Bush. But Obama, was very concerned, I think, that he was trying to get the U.S. out of two wars and that he would lose in 2012 if he was perceived as weak. And so there was a lot of posturing. And the Pentagon boxed him in, and Petraeus wanted that troop escalation that they called a surge in Afghanistan. And Obama acquiesced in it to no good result. But he did withdraw from Iraq and was very happy to have done so. But as you say, Bush had already set in train turmoil in Iraq and the foundation of ISIL that would bring the U.S. back in. So I think in some instances, Obama wanted to do better than he did, and circumstances stood in his way.
Well, I also feel that George W. Bush coming back into the public realm is not so bad if he were to acknowledge his responsibility, right? I mean, certainly if Bush were to come out into the public realm and say, you know what, I feel terrible about all of these things that I put into place, and I'm appalled that they have now stayed and gotten worse, and now this, tyrant is in charge and taking everything that I put into place and pushing it beyond even what I intended. And I'm sorry I did that, and we need to step back. But of course, he has no acknowledgement and makes no acknowledgement of his responsibility. And the media are only too happy to play along. So of course, so important for us to remember that history.
Yeah, it would be, I think, a wonderful thing if Bush would renounce some of those crucial decisions that he made that still have our country on the wrong track. I don't expect that to happen. And I think it weakens his case that he's trying to make, that something new and different and much worse is happening. When it's obvious to anyone who followed his career and his presidency that he did put in place many of the building blocks for Trumpism. And I think in general, until the Republican Party in the United States renounces the Nixon strategy, admits to itself that it had played a sinister role in whipping up anti-minority feeling in order to get white votes in the Deep South, for instance, that it will be crippled in any attempt to push back against the neo-Nazism that is a part of Trump's campaign. You know that 10% of the country who are extremist white nationalists have been voting Republican and have been covertly cultivated by the Republican establishment all along. All that Trump has done is to make it explicit. And you can't fight that unless you renounce it.
And I'm so glad you're bringing up the Republican Party. We've been talking primarily about Bush, but the party as a whole enabled him and enabled his agenda. He didn't just do it alone. So certainly the Republicans as a party bear a lot of responsibility and continue to today. Some are speaking out against Trump, but far too many are happy to go along silently, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. Very disturbing.
Yeah. Well, Juan, we'll post a link to your blog, juancole.com, from our site later today. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Sonali. Thank you.
Juan Cole is a Richard P. Mitchell Collegiate Professor of History at the University of Michigan, author of a number of books. You can read his weekly column at truthdig.com, and his blog-informed comment can be found at juancole.com. We've been discussing George W. Bush's ugly legacy. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.